is evangelism. You know, when was the last time that you were involved with or heard terms like gospel meeting coming soon, lectureships, other than at a college or a university perhaps, which most people think to take that that's specifically for maybe preachers and elders and college professors and the Bible programs and so forth. Special series. You don't hear people, well, we're going to have a special series on a particular topic or work. You don't hear that spoken about much. Gospel campaigns. You don't hear too much said about gospel campaigns. Door knocking events. You know, used to be a lot of door knocking preceding a gospel meeting and so forth. Some of you in here probably have even gone to a Brush Arbor meeting. I have. It's been a long time. But a Brush Arbor meeting was simply, they put up posts and they covered the top with brush and they had a meeting, a gospel meeting underneath it. I think the last one I went to, I was probably a child, and it was down in the very southern part of Missouri, down around Caulfield, I believe is where it was set up. But it was a Brush Arbor gospel meeting. Kind of a unique experience. Dogs would run through and anything else. But it was a gospel meeting, and it was well attended. And gospel meetings used to be well attended. Gospel meetings used to last 2 weeks. Y'all remember two-week gospel meetings? Some of you do, I'm sure. And then it kind of dwindled off to 1 week. And then now, if you hear of gospel meetings, it's usually a Sunday morning through a Wednesday evening, you know. And saying, well, that's just two more days. That's just two more days that we're asking of people and that we should be there ourselves. But guess what? Monday and Tuesday, it didn't fare too well usually, did it? Attendance would drop way down and things. And then gradually, you know, gospel meetings. You don't hear too often even of gospel meetings. Dr. Stafford North wrote a book called Evangelizing Your Community. And in his book, he mentioned, and it's on evangelism, says nearly every congregation would say its greatest weakness is in its local outreach to convert people to Christ. In other words, our local evangelism. He said most times we do a better job of supporting overseas missionaries, and we here at Watermill, we support a number of overseas missionaries, but I'm not saying that we do a good job with that. We can do better. And one thing that we're going to try to do with our working with our overseas missionaries, people that we support, is we're going to assign someone to each one of those men and their families, and we're going to stay in contact. You know, yeah, we'll support you $200 a month and send them a check every month, and that's the end of it, unless every year or 2 years they come back and want to make a report. That's pretty well been the extent of it. We can do better than that. For example, if I am assigned, or if I take Joy, Tammy Treat, who work over in the South Pacific, it is my responsibility to stay in touch with them. Even I can email a little bit. I can text a little bit, believe it or not, and stay in touch. And what do you need? What are your challenges? What are your prayer needs? That's the way that we can do that a little bit better. But Brother Norris said that we do a pretty good, decent job supporting overseas missions. We can figure out a way to do a lot of good benevolent work. He said we can develop and devise good education programs. Our youth programs, yeah, we can do the same. We're doing pretty good there. Our worship services, he said, the care of our facilities and our grounds. He said most congregations will work pretty hard at accomplishing those things, but we don't realize that our primary mission is what? Evangelize, to reach out. Yeah. It's the job of the saved to help save others, right? It's the job of the saved to help save others. That's our primary mission. And Brother Norris said, according to what he can see, is that one of the primary reasons that we tend to neglect some of these things in our reaching out for our local evangelism is that most congregations do not really have a good plan in place. We've not developed a blueprint for how we're going to go about doing this. So it's like if we decide we're going to have a meeting next week, Brother so-and-so's coming, and who's going to sign up to feed him, and where's he going to stay, and this and that. But that's not the blueprint we need, is it? How are we going to get people here? You know, how are we going to do that? I think I can tell you from some of my experience, and we probably have a little more experience at some of this than some of you might. And when I say we, I'm talking about our work at Fairhaven. And the only reason I'm talking about that is that puts us out in a lot of congregations. You know, different congregations, smaller congregations, larger congregations, primarily in Missouri, but we do go to the west, the edge of Kansas, down in Oklahoma a little bit, across parts of northern Arkansas, a few congregations even over in Illinois, and from time to time we're there doing reports. And a lot of those congregations, particularly our, not necessarily, but a lot of times our rural congregations, I can remember going there not too many years ago, and they might have 120 people. Now they might have 50. Those that have 50 might have 25. Those that have 25 are closing their doors. They're closing their doors. And that's a reality. That is a reality. There's lots of congregations that are in trouble. And there's lots of people that live in those areas. But what has happened is that the same families are there, time after time, year after year. Folks grow old. They pass away, or in some cases are incapacitated to where they can't come out to services, homebound or whatever the case may be. And guess what? There's no one taking their place. There's no one taking their place. And in those congregations that have 50 or less, I can almost assure you there won't be any children there. I can almost assure you there won't be any children there unless the preacher happens to have a child or two or whatever. And you look at it and you think, well, you know, what's the reason? Well, part of it has to do with evangelism, local evangelism, even in the rural areas. They're all friends. They're all neighbors. A lot of them are relatives, but even they don't oftentimes be able to evangelize and preach the gospel. But this is where I might get a little support and help from y'all. What has changed over the years? What has changed? Our foreign missions, and The soil is pretty good over where you go, isn't it? Excellent. Preacher's paradise. Okay. To do the work here. Okay. We live in a different time, so different culture, wouldn't you agree? You know, perhaps it's not safe to say, okay, we're going to do some door knocking. I don't know that that's too safe anymore, is it? The last time we did a door knocking here, we ended up, I think Bob's talked about it before, we ended up hanging a lot of things on doorknobs. Most people won't answer the door. Some will answer the door and take your literature and say thank you and close the door, and that's the end of it. And in that meeting, I think Bob commented, he didn't remember if he'd seen one person that was here as a result of that. So I don't know, maybe that's not effective or safe or wise to do things like that. Julie?
Over 50 years ago, at the present congregation in California, Brother Jefferson Walling had a vision for the, and the elders there at the time supported what they would buy with school buses. They would paint them, and then they would go door knocking, invite children to go to schools that their parents would go to.
There used to be a bus ministry program. Some of you are probably familiar with it. It was called Joy, Jesus First, Others Second, Yourself Last, or something. It's called a Joy Bus Program. We had one, I remember, years ago in Mountain Home. I think Harrison probably had one, Greeley, I'm not sure. But we'd go out in the community and we'd pick up kids, just like you're talking about. And sometimes you were just, you realized that you were babysitting, but a lot of times those kids would come, and they were enthusiastic, and I think it helped the congregation, our entire congregation. From I don't know where this came from. I think it's one of Bill's lessons from a long time ago. He said, "Soul winners are not soul winners because of what they know, but because of whom they know. And how well they know him, and how much they want others to know him. Yet there is some know-how involved." Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves." Matthew chapter 6, or chapter 7, "Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine, or they will trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces." 2 Timothy, "The things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach them to others." There's a number of scriptures, if you study the Bible, Ruth. Okay.
One day, we went to garage
sale. All right.
And we were talking to a lady that was having the garage sale. And something came up. She said, "Well, what church do you go to?" I was pleased to tell her where we went. She said, "I'm going to be there."
Well, good.
In the afternoon, I went to the thrift store, and on my way to the to the thrift store. I had to park in the at the Dollar Tree. But there was a kid sitting on the sidewalk there, and he said, you go to church at Watermill? And I said, oh, yes. He said, I used to be a Fairhaven. And I know he doesn't go, I just felt like he doesn't go anywhere. And I didn't, you know, I talked to him enough to where he said he was doing okay and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Probably didn't take full advantage of that opportunity the way I should have.
Well, maybe you'll see him again. Yeah.
But you see what I mean? It's little things like that that I
don't think it is. You know, the scriptures, almost every book has something in there about evangelism. If you look in Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20, where he talks about the Great Commission. In Mark 16, 19 and 20, they went out and preached everywhere. In Luke 24, 44 through 50, the risen Christ commands us to teach. Acts 2, 38 and 39. What did we know? That is on what? Peter preaching on what? What day was that? Pentecost, the day of Pentecost. It says, men and brethren, people ask, men and brethren, what shall we do? What shall we do? Romans 15, verses 16 through 18. Now they not only ministered to the Jews, but in this particular scripture, what were they doing? Ministering to the Gentiles as well. Luke 9, verses 1 through 6, the 12 were sent out. Luke 10, 1 through 9, 70, remember the 70 men were sent out two by two to every city, that Jesus was going to teach, to stop along the way. So these men were sent out first. The harvest is great, but the labors are few, is what is emphasized, I think, in that set of scripture. Even when you get all the way over to the end of the New Testament, over in Revelations, where it talks about the letters to the various churches there, he had some things to say to them, didn't he? About some of them were lukewarm. Some of them were corrupt. Some of them were doing well. But throughout the New Testament, you can't read very far. But what it doesn't emphasize, our purpose, one of our very important purposes as Christians, is our own personal evangelism efforts that we can all do. It doesn't stop. You know, we hope that the Lord's church as we know it doesn't cease to exist because we all die away or whatever the case may be. There's sometimes we look at reasons why there is seems to be a certain amount of decline, you know, and we have lots of different people that are trying to find all these answers to different things. You know, and maybe perhaps how we go about worshiping or this or that. But truth of the matter is, the only way that David's going to be replaced someday is what? We have somebody else coming in, right? That we've taught and evangelized, and we just keep replenishing. Because if you don't, you're going to be just like, we're going to all be just like those congregations that I mentioned that I go to a lot of times, that I remember had 100, now they have 50, and they had 50, now they have 25, and then they get down less than that, and the doors close, and we get a notice in the mail from them that says, We've had to close our doors. We didn't have enough people there. It's a sad day for their congregation, and we're going to sell our building. That's the end for that congregation.
If you remember that, several years ago, Broadway and Madison and Senior Freedom Road merged because where Broadway and Madison were was in the old part of town, and there was all that was there was older people.
Yeah.
And when they merged, it became the Sunset.
Okay. One thing that I have noticed and observed, and some of the rest of you probably have as well, about Watermill and our congregation, is that a lot of our membership that we have now, they weren't members here 10, 12 years ago. Have any of you observed that besides me? You know, if someone came back that had not been here in 10 years and they looked around, there'd be so many people that they didn't recognize. You know, they just didn't recognize them because they're new to us.
I like the diversity of ages.
Yep.
We have water. I remember when I came back after the pandemic, there were so many people that were coming up to me asking me if I was new here to water. And so that was, they showed me the growth that we had. We were able to get new members even with the people.
Okay. Do y'all have any ideas or suggestions? I like some feedback on how we can do a better job of becoming more evangelistic.
I always hear people say there's somebody there like me. So if like a family is asking a young family, they know there's going to be people there that have interests the same, ages the same, something that's in common. So I think that it's really good to have a mix of ages and stages around the church, because that's who they can go after a neighbor. Whoever, if you see that your neighbor who has kids is coming in, or you see a young couple, or you see a middle-aged couple, if you see people there like you, you're much more comfortable coming into a church where there's somebody there like them.
I understand. Yeah, right. Julie was just mentioning, if you didn't hear, that she said sometimes people are interested in knowing, are there people like them? And she wasn't referring to race or anything like that. She just meant like family for the children, for, I think that's what you were saying. Yeah. Who was the person at Harding that used to do all the church growth information? Does anyone remember his name? Yakeley? Okay. You know, he did many years of research on the Church of Christ and church growth and things. Do you remember Greeley when he compiled a list of reasons why people would choose a particular congregation or church? Do you remember what he said? Okay. He had them kind of listed there in order, and it's kind of surprising in a way, but I think right at the top was the preacher. They came because they liked the preacher, you know, which kind of surprised me, you know, that was the number one reason why people went to a congregation. But when I talk to someone and I say, where do you go to church? And they'll say, well, we go down here toward Ozark there. And I said, why do you go to that particular church or denomination, whatever? Oh, that preacher is outstanding. You know, he just dresses just like jeans or whatever. And he's just outstanding, Paul. That's okay. He's here today, by the way. Yeah. But another reason was children's ministries. What's there for our children? That was way up there toward the top. What's there for our children? Do they have a good Bible Bible program, Bible study for our children? We want our children to be involved.
I was looking for whole congregation when we were coming from California. I remember talking to Bill on the phone, and Amber and Aaron were getting the point where they were going to be in the youth group, and my first priority was to have a strong youth group, and it was because of the strong youth group that we were
You know, we think that personal evangelism is hard, and I guess it must be, and it's challenging for all of us. It's not natural. Should be, but it's not just commonplace for just to go up and Ron?
I think that our biggest adversary is entertainment. I think people want to be entertained. Yeah. I see all the great mega churches and stuff, but it's like people are not really coming to see to save their soul. Or, like you said, a preacher, congregation, they're here to say, what can you do for me?
Yeah.
I want to, and our children fit right in with that. It's like a lot of our children are show up because they've been raised here, and they hear the same thing over and over, and it's like, there's that, there's just, how can we make it more appealing? We have to start from ourselves.
Paul, do you have a...
You asked for action, excuse me.
Yeah, sure.
There's a couple of things I think we need to know.
Okay.
One is in marketing, and that's what we're doing. And so we're marketing this church and ourselves and our gospel. And in marketing, typically you're looking at a 1 to 5% response. So one of the first things you have to understand when you go out and evangelize is somewhere around 95% of the people you evangelize are coming. You're planting seeds. And like we're told, all planted, Apollos watered, God gives fruit. And you simply have to understand that because the people you rejected don't come to church tomorrow doesn't mean that your work was not important.
Yeah.
And it's I think that part of the thing that we get into is we're looking for instant gratification, and evangelism typically does not provide
it. So maybe we give up too soon?
We do give up. And I think that giving up is even the wrong word.
Okay.
We don't where's the Ken Stokes what I need? When we plant a seed and you water it, you don't come back the next day and expect water.
Yeah.
You did your part, you go on, you do the next part. And the other thing that we're doing, and I think you guys have started to hear, is I have heard of programs, not participated in any, but well, they will take, like a summer program, like our intern, and they'll take teachers and they will teach them how to evangelize. And maybe they'll take a group of adults as well, so Wednesday night and Sunday night class, and teach them how to evangelize. Because I think most of us don't know.
Okay.
Kurt Ruth talks about how people spoke to her and she was able to speak back to them. And that's wonderful when people present us. But how do we create the opportunity for us to plant those seeds and then move on?
And this is going to be a series of about 12 lessons. And that's what we hope to accomplish, Paul, is in the course of this, I'll teach a lesson, Scott will have a lesson, John will have a lesson, and each lesson will be something dealing with evangelism, and hopefully when we complete it, we'll all be a little better equipped to be able to handle it. This idea of rejection, even in the Bible, what was the message told to these that went out? If you're rejected, if you go to a city where there's no response, there's antagonism, there's no hope, what are you supposed to do? Wipe the dust from your feet and move on. Well, you know, that's, if you go there, you get rejected. Don't quit. They never quit. Even when they didn't get along always, the ones that were being sent out. Remember, who was it? Paul and Mark couldn't agree. Did they quit? What'd they do? He's got a different person, and they went separate ways, but they did quit. They still went out, and they teached, and they evangelized. The message was the same, even though maybe they couldn't agree on exactly how to go about doing it or to go together. They split out, and they went, and they still continued to teach. If you look at these, you know, these early teachers, these apostles, those that went out, did they have a lot of opposition? They had a lot of opposition, didn't they? Do you think these Jewish leaders relished the idea that they're preaching about this message from this man Jesus? You know? You think those that were the Jewish leaders that had maybe much to lose, you think they went along with that? No. Did they suffer persecution? Certainly. Did they limit themselves to just Jews? No. They took this to Gentiles. Did they limit themselves to one little geographical area? Of course not. They went throughout the region. And then they expanded, and then they, Paul, you know, ended up in Europe, even. Paul's missionary journeys, you know, he went quite a ways, taught. Some of them he came back to, visited, helped establish elderships. So, you know, these early teachers, Julie, Do we fail to recognize the amount of distress that's all around us sometimes? Do we fail to truly understand, as Julie said, what people really need? And can we look inside ourselves and say, we're here? You know, we're here for what these people need. Or is that going to be too much trouble for us? You know, but that's an evangelistic tool. I don't know all the answers to it, to local evangelism. Ann back there, you know, she's made many trips over to Africa. And others that go to Africa, you know what keeps taking them back? What keeps you going back, Ann? Okay. Brother North, in one of his chapters, or the first chapter here, he said the early Christians focused on, and he gives the following thing, so just be patient with me here. I want to go through each one of them pretty quickly. Time's about up. He said early Christians focused on preaching Christ. Preaching Christ. They didn't preach other things. They didn't go, they focused on preaching Christ. He said the early Christians had a clear message about how people were to respond to the gospel. How, what the response should be. The early Christians, when they went out and taught, what did they teach? They taught, this is what you need to do in order to obtain salvation. You know? And we're talking about not just, you know, not just hearing, but believing, repenting, being baptized. That was the message. Read your Bible. Read and see when they went out. They talked about it. So they were bold and courageous. Some of them even were willing to be beaten, jailed, and even to die for their cause. So they were willing to speak about Jesus in many different forums or settings. Paul speaking in front of the Stoics and the Epicureans over in Athens, where the great wisdom center of the universe was. But yet he would go in and introduce something different. They believed that regardless of the spiritual condition, everyone could benefit from the gospel. This goes back to what some of y'all have heard from. Regardless of their spiritual condition, they could benefit. They could benefit. They were willing to speak in different types of places, whether it be public and going to the synagogues, house to house, while under arrest. They had strong fellowship. He said an important one was that they served others. They were servants. They were servants. And they prayed. They prayed for boldness. They prayed for finding more workers. They prayed as they were sent out. And they trusted that God's hand was upon them every step. That God was with them every step. Thank y'all. First bell, I guess there's two bells. Well, we finished sort of right on time, didn't we? Brother Greeley. It's easy to accumulate lots of information, kind of know what to do. And when I'm always talking to any of y'all, I'm talking to myself first. You know, I deal with the same struggles sometimes that many of y'all might. It's not easy. It's a little bit challenging sometimes. But we try. We do our best. You know, and this was not intended to be any sort of a downer at all. What I wanted to do was try to encourage us. And I don't know if that came across that way or not, but we all need to be encouraged. You know, we all need to be encouraged in all walks of life, whether it be lost, whether it be struggling spiritually, family issue, we all need to be encouraged. And we, if we can go out and evangelize and bring more people in and fill all these pews and continue to grow and find strength and might and wisdom in the Lord, then we've done a good deed. We've done a good deed. Thank y'all.